Okay, so we're going to continue our class on the existence of God. We are nearing the end of it. In fact, tonight could be the last night of this particular set of discussions, depending on how long it takes. To me, this section is the most interesting on the Christian evidences for the existence of God, and what Christians particularly might believe, because I are one of those, so I'm kind of curious, you know, what might a Christian have to say about the existence of God? But if you don't have as many questions as I hope you do or comments, then we'll wrap up tonight. If we need to take an extra night, then we can. Either way is fine. We've been doing this through 12 different approaches, and I'm even going to cheat tonight and subdivide one into two. But nobody wants to hear 13 anything. So 12 is what we called it, 12 approaches to God, and we looked at the classic reasons that have come down through church history. We looked at science-y reasons, what in science might point you to that direction, and we looked at the more daunting philosophical approaches, which are interesting if you're interested in philosophy. If you're not, then they're not as interesting to you. The Christian set of evidences, though, the Christian-based approaches, as I said, are those that would only work for a Christian. So everything I've said up till now, we didn't even say who God was, did we? We just asked, is there a God? This God, according to the first nine arguments, God could be Allah, God could be the God of Judaism, the God of Christianity, some Hindu God. Right? We weren't even specific. We just said, is there some kind of thing, person, being called God? And we tried to get to that question. And this last set, we find that if we narrow our range a little bit and we say, what about being Christian? Is there anything about being Christian that gives us kind of a special approach to this question? And I think there are some answers to that that are worth investigating. Here again, like everything else I've said, will everyone find every one of these persuasive? Probably not. In fact, there's at least one of them that I'm going to give a disclaimer on, where I myself find myself very much on the fence about it, and you may too. Especially after I tell you to be, you know, suspicious of it. But it's one that gets brought up a lot, so I felt like I needed to mention it. Okay, the first one I'm going to break into two pieces. And basically what number 10 is the existence of miracles. But we're going to break it into two pieces. One, we're going to talk about 10A, the miracles of Jesus. And then 10B, I want to talk about one particular miracle that stands out above the others. Okay, so here's kind of how, don't read that yet, it's just confusing gibberish. Why would we talk about miracles and the question of the existence of God? Well, here's kind of how the argument works. We don't all agree on the definition of a miracle, but most people kind of have a fuzzy idea of what it is. Okay. Usually, people are willing to agree to a definition of a miracle, that it's something that a human couldn't do, that nature as we know it doesn't do, and that seems to imply the existence of some other being who can do that sort of thing. Is that sufficiently vague? Right, I'm trying to make it very broad because there are a lot of variable definitions of miracle and what it is. They only have to agree on the specifics of what a miracle is. Okay, but something like that. Or to use a Bible passage, does anyone remember, here's your quiz for tonight, in John chapter 3, Nicodemus comes to Jesus by night, and what does he say to Jesus? And if you need to cheat, John chapter 3, verse 1 and 2. Yes, in stereo, we got it. Two people remember the verse. Master, or teacher, we know thou art a teacher sent from God. How come? Because no man could do the things that thou doest. I learned that in King James. The things that thou doest, except God be with him. Okay? So what was he claiming? Without even using the word miracle, I don't think the word miracle even appears in the text. It might. I have to go look. Now I'm questioning my memory. Anyway, it's a reference clearly to miracles. You are doing things. What kind of things? Well, it wasn't eating dinner, right? You're doing things that no one could do except God made that possible. Does that make sense? So Nicodemus, on behalf of the Jewish leadership, who didn't want to be there that night, said, we know this is true. This is what a miracle means. Okay? Things of this nature. We don't have to use the word miracle. You don't want to use the word miracle? Don't even use it. Things of this nature. Are there things that, if they happened, would demand some kind of being like God to do them? And have they ever happened? Well, where would we want to start? If you're a Bible reader, you can just pick a page, right? We have lots of miracles in the Bible we could talk about. The catch is that we're talking to people who presumably don't believe in the Bible to start with. So you should believe in God. Why? Because God did miracles. How do you know? Because the Bible says God did miracles. Why do you believe the Bible? Because God said to. I don't believe in God. Oh. Well, we went in a circle there and we didn't get anywhere. Okay? So what we're kind of trying to find is some sort of miracle type thing, the sort of thing the Bible says happened, that we could give you a reasonable case for without ever opening a Bible. Now that's tough. Could we ever prove any miracle happened without opening a Bible? I'm going to suggest that the miracles of Jesus are some of the best historically attested miraculous claims beyond comparison. That there's no other miraculous claim as well attested outside even the Bible than the miracles of Jesus. To the point that the enemies of Jesus usually acknowledged that he had some kind of ability or power beyond what was normal, like Nicodemus, who's a Jewish leader. And so the case I want to make then comes from some Jewish writings. To tell you kind of what type of Jewish writings I'm drawing from, this is a body of documents called the Talmud. So the 32nd history of the Talmud. Here's what the Talmud is, okay? The Jewish people had the written law. In addition to the written law, they had the traditions of the rabbis and the elders interpreting the law, which was called the Mishnah. In addition to the Mishnah, they had the interpretations of the Mishnah, which were interpretations of the law, which was called the Gemara. When they put the Gemara and the Mishnah in the same book, they called it the Talmud. And that came into existence from before the time of Christ all the way through, you get a published version of it, till about the 5th century after Christ. It's called the Talmud. It's interesting because there's two different branches of it. There were Jews who stayed in Babylon, so we have what's called the Babylonian Talmud, and then we have those that went to Jerusalem, so we have the Jerusalem Talmud, which are both just, it's rabbis interpreting the Old Testament. Some of it's really interesting, some of it's fanciful and strange, and you think, are you reading the same Old Testament I am? I don't know. But it's fascinating stuff if you like that sort of thing. And what might you expect? If you're a Jewish person, a Jewish teacher, writing a book, 2nd, 3rd, 4th century AD, who might you have to say something about? Jesus. Jesus happened, right? Let me just clear the air on that one right off the bat. Once in a while, some atheist who has intellect beyond his knowledge will say something like, we can't even prove that Jesus is a historical person that ever lived. Jesus is the most fully documented historical person who has ever lived. If anyone has ever lived, it was Jesus in history. We have more documentation for his life than any other ancient historical person. It's easier to reproduce the life of Jesus than it is Caesar. I mean, we have that kind of documentation for Jesus. So there's no question that he lived. And sure enough, the Jewish folks have to respond to that in some way, right? Do we in churches have literature that we put out responding to people we don't agree with? Right. Well, the Jewish folk, they said, we better say something about this Jesus who keeps drawing our people away, okay, even after he's long gone. So the Talmud has references to Jesus. Some of them are kind of obscure. Most of them are made just kind of to make fun of him. So if you read it and you're looking for polite discourse on Jesus, Talmud, you might guess, Jewish folk are not real polite. A few that aren't on the screen. Jesus burns his food. Real important stuff there that you knew that, right? The Talmud is very, it says multiple times that Jesus burned his food, which seems to be kind of a euphemism for he was a bad apprentice. Somebody should have trained him better. He just, He didn't know what he was doing, right? And he couldn't build a fire right. He had problems, okay? There's a made-up fictional account in the Talmud, again, trying to make fun of Jesus, where Jesus gets into an argument with the high priest. And what question do you think they're debating? The question is, if a prostitute gives the money she made as a prostitute to the temple, could the high priest purchase a toilet with that money? That's in the Jewish Talmud. And why would you have that question in the Talmud? Because it was a way to make fun of Jesus. Oh yeah, there was a person named Jesus. He answered these ridiculous questions. What theme in the gospel is that trying to make fun of? Who did Jesus commonly associate with in the gospels? Yeah, that kind of people, right? Prostitute, sinners, and things like that. We often see him reaching out to them. So the way that you know what spin is, right? It's political season. Spin is where you take a story that's true and you twist it around until it kind of says more what you want. In the Talmud, it says, oh yeah, Jesus is always hanging around with prostitutes. In fact, he would debate these questions about bringing prostitutes in the temple and stuff like that. Okay? So most of it's making fun of Jesus. But then there's a few things like this one on the screen. This is from a text in the Talmud called Sanhedrin. And it has the reference there for anybody that wants to run home and check their Talmud. I don't have one either, so it's okay. But it says, Jesus the Nazarene practiced magic and led Israel astray. If you keep reading, it even tells you where he learned magic. Any guesses where he learned magic? Don't say Hogwarts, because that would be funny, but it wouldn't be the right answer. Where did Jesus learn magic? Gold star. In Egypt. Where are the only magicians and sorcerers in the Old Testament? They're all from Egypt. And where does the New Testament say Jesus went for a time? Joseph took him down to Egypt. So the Talmud says, yeah, they went down to Egypt and he learned black magic and sorcery and came back and bewitched people. Okay, gold star, you get an indulgence. Jesus the Nazarene practiced magic and led people astray. Another place it says Jesus is denounced because he practiced sorcery and enticed Israel to apostasy. So again, not saying anything nice about Jesus. I want to make that clear. It's not a gospel account. Why would you concede the fact that he did acts of magic and sorcery? What word is missing? Why not? Jesus practiced false magic, or Jesus pretended to do sorcery. Why say this and even concede the point? Because it was very difficult to deny with a straight face that Jesus hadn't done something remarkable. Even for a Jewish person who is trying to rebut the Christian argument, they didn't feel safe going out and just saying, Jesus never did any of that. Never happened. All those stories in the Gospels never happened. They didn't feel like they could get away with that. And so instead, they did what people do. When there's an inconvenient truth, you spin it, right? And you say, well, not miracles, magic. And not miracles, sorcery. And he learns it from Egypt, not from God. Now, that wasn't Nicodemus' conclusion. There's at least one other conclusion that's possible, right? But when the most antagonistic enemies of Jesus admit that he did something, we don't know what it was, but he did it, yeah, okay, fine. That itself is pretty incredible evidence, isn't it? If you are in a courtroom and the person who is making the case against you concedes one of your main points, is that pretty good evidence? When you have a hostile witness who has every reason to be against you, who testifies for you, even a little bit, is that incredible evidence? Because you could say, if you want to, and atheists do all the time, well, of course, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John say Jesus did miracles. They're believers. They're getting something out of it, which they weren't. They got killed out of it, but never mind. Atheists want you to believe that maybe they had some kind of motive for telling these stories. What motive does a Jewish rabbi have for saying Jesus worked sorcery? Well, he could just say Jesus never did anything. He could stick with the other story. He burned his dish in public. Okay. So that by itself is interesting. Another example that's not on the screen, because I almost left it out. This is a book, big book I have. I don't have the Talmud, but I have this one. This is the Complete Works of Flavius Josephus, the Jewish historian, first century, lived after the time, just kind of contemporary with and following the years of Jesus. He's the one that the Romans hijacked and said, we're going to go destroy Jerusalem now. We'd like a Jewish person to write all this down. And so he wrote the history of the destruction of Jerusalem and then also wrote the antiquities of the Jews and Jewish history as a way to kind of convey Jewish culture to his Roman captors and so forth. He's kind of a weasel. He's not a great guy. But his history is interesting. He's one of the only real legitimate first century Jewish historical sources we have. I want to say that one more time. He's Jewish, not a Christian. Okay? This is what's called the Testimonium. It's the most controversial passage in all of his writings. This is 18:33. Now there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as receive the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was Christ. And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men amongst us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again the third day. As the divine prophets had foretold, these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him, and the tribe of Christians so named from him, are not extinct at this day. Jewish writer, so first of all, is Jesus a real person in history? You have a Jewish person saying, oh yeah, right there next to Herod and Antiochus and whoever else he wants to talk about. He's a real person. Listen to some of the things. Now, here's the problem with it before I even go into detail. It's such good evidence, it's almost too good to be true. And so there are some who say, Josephus didn't write that. Some Christian slipped it in there. Because no Jewish person could ever have written that. Which, again, would be very convenient if you don't want to be there in the first place. I'll admit, there are parts of it that are hard for me to believe a Jewish person wrote. The part where he says Jesus was Christ, it's really hard for me to believe a Jewish person wrote that. But even if it got doctored a little bit, some of it is very authentically Josephus. The tribe of Christians, would a Christian person slipping a paragraph into a Jewish book refer to us as the tribe of Christians? That's a weird phrase. It's a Jewish phrase. It's not a Christian phrase. Anywhere in the New Testament do you get language about the tribe of Christians? That's not really a Christian phrase. And there's a couple other phrases in there that Josephus uses them, but we don't have anybody else that does. Of all the Greek manuscripts of Josephus, there's not a single one that doesn't have this paragraph in it. So there's not even a variant that we can argue about. So it is hard to believe a Jewish person wrote this, but here it is. But even if you take some of that out, let's say Christians slipped in the line about he is Christ. I don't know how they did that, but let's say they did. Just the rest of it is impressive. There was at this time Jesus, a wise man. That's pretty impressive. Want to guess what other people Josephus calls a wise man? James, you're my resident Josephus reader. Can you think of anyone that Josephus might call a wise man in Jewish history?
Solomon.
Solomon and the prophets is about the only people that Josephus will call wise. He says Jesus was wise. He says he was a doer of wonderful works. He doesn't even use the word miracle. Doesn't say anything really outlandish, just he did wonderful things. Okay, that itself is pretty impressive. He drew over to him many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. Okay. The bit about Pilate, there's no question that that's true. And then listen to the way he says the part about the resurrection. Those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again the third day. He doesn't even say he came back from the dead. He says he appeared to those Christians. Which, if I were a Jewish writer trying to begrudgingly admit the point that all the Christian references claim that Jesus appeared, I wouldn't say Jesus appeared, I'd say Jesus appeared to them. He didn't appear to me, Josephus, he appeared to them. So to me, that sounds like the kind of thing Josephus could say. He appeared to them. Doesn't even use the word resurrection. Because that's a dangerous word. Appearance? Well, you might have saw a dream, I don't know. So Josephus isn't going to go out on a ledge and say what happened. He just says he appeared to them the third day. So even if you kind of scale back, if you take it at the most extreme, you know, face value, it's, I mean, I could put that in the gospel. I mean, that's a blatant Christian testimony. Even if you scale it back a little bit, at the very least, what kind of things could you say about Jesus? Wise man, did wonderful works. People claim that he appeared after his death, the third day. And the tribe of Christians is still around. Okay. So have we at least made some kind of case here that the miracles of Jesus are even admitted in large part, though begrudgingly, by people who didn't believe in Jesus then or since? Is that pretty good evidence that those miracles, or whatever you want to call them, wonderful works, we'll go with Josephus, is that pretty good evidence that wonderful works took place? Pretty good evidence. It's pretty good testimony. If you were in a court of law and someone who didn't like your point said, yeah, yeah, he did it, I'll admit that much, well, that's pretty good. Okay. What problems might we have with this argument? Okay, so Jesus did miracles, so there must be a God. One problem that comes to mind is, what about other people who claim to have done miracles? Let me start out. Do you know anybody else besides Jesus who's claimed to do miracles? Apostles. And they did them in the name of Christ, right? Okay, so we have testimony that the apostles did it in the name of Christ, and we have some Jewish folk who claim to have done some miracles. Okay. What other claims of miracles do you know of? Yes, Elymas, the magician. Yeah, in Acts chapter 13-ish. Read Acts, it's in there somewhere. Yeah, Simon the sorcerer. All of these are accounts that come from where? The Bible, yeah. Can you think of anything other than the Bible that claims somebody did a miracle? Yeah. So the New Testament claims that even the Jewish courts said, yeah, you did miracles. We want you to stop, but yeah, in the name of Jesus. Who else? Who else does miracles that we're worried about? Did Muhammad do any miracles? I mean, according to the Quran, does anybody know? There's a possibility of one or two references in the Quran that make it sound like he might have done something miraculous. And there is zero attestation outside of the Quran. So even reading the Quran, you're not sure if he's supposed to have done a miracle or not. His ascension up into the sky is the most miraculous thing Muhammad ever did. And the leaving of the law, Quran, through the angel Jibreel, those are the most miraculous things that he ever did, was leaving. Okay. And again, that's not attested to by anything. Nobody saw it, conveniently. The miracles of Jesus, anybody see it? It would have been easy to refute. Listen, if you want to make up a miracle, let me tell you how you do it. I was alone one time. That's how it should start. Here's how you don't make up a miracle. There were 5,000 people there and I fed them. That is a lousy lie. Because that's easy to find those people. Where are they? 5,000 people? Okay? These are lousy lies. And that was just the men. So the miracles of Jesus, they're not even good lies. But the miracles you get from, like, Muhammad, if you want to call him that, always he's the only one that was there. The Eastern religions have some things that kind of could be maybe miracle stories, but they're not real clear either. Nothing like, I fed 5,000 people or I brought somebody back from the dead. What about modern miracles? Does anybody claim to be working miracles today? Yeah, I have that channel. Yeah, I see him all the time. Yeah. Interestingly enough, even they claim by and large to be doing it in the name of Christ, right? Which doesn't hurt our case. Now, let me be clear. I'm not advocating that you point to them and say, see, there's a miracle. There's proof for God, because I think they're charlatans. But my point is, even that doesn't hurt our case. Either they are doing miracles or they aren't. If they aren't, then they're liars, and that's what I said all along. If they are, then they're doing it in the name of Christ, and that doesn't change this argument. It gives me lots of other headache, but it doesn't. See my point? As far as the existence of God goes, There's no atheist out there going, see, now I have evidence that not just, there's nothing out there that's a contrary claim that you can point to that we have to worry about. So I think the evidence of miracles of Jesus, to put a short version on it, the miracles of Jesus are very well attested, even outside the Gospels, which are pretty good evidence themselves. They're very lousy lies, because too many people saw them. They're too big of a claim. I mean, if Jesus had said, here is the miracle, here's the proof of God, I'm going to flip this quarter, and it's going to land on heads 10 times in a row, right? Well, that's not very impressive. But that's not the kind of miracles he does. What does he do? Raises the dead. He's, you know, doing just outrageous things. That would be easy to deny. And the story of Lazarus, again, in the biblical account, which I understand if you're an atheist, you don't believe the biblical account. The biblical account, the Jewish people decide it would be easier to put Lazarus to death than it would be to deny that Jesus raised him from the dead. We can't deny that Jesus raised him from the dead. Let's just make him dead again. Because there wasn't any way around it. They're too well attested. So the miracles of Jesus, I think, are a pretty good argument for the existence of God. If such a person existed named Jesus, and he did, and if he did miracles, and he did, then that points to the being that Jesus said gave him that power and was that power. Okay. Any questions about this round of discussion on miracles? We're not quite done with miracles, but any questions on that? Jesus doing miracles? Okay. What miracle have I not talked about? It's the most important one of all.
Creation.
Well, that's a good one. Okay, that's a good one too. Thanks, James. What's the other miracle I haven't talked about? That's the most important one of all. How about the resurrection? So, if you don't feel like thumbing through the Talmud and looking for proof of the miraculous work of Jesus, and most of us don't, another way to talk about it is just to pick one. Because it only takes one, right? How many miracles does it take to prove the existence of God? Atheism can't explain one of them. So I'm happy if you can give me one legitimate, can't-be-done miracle, I've got to have God somewhere. So why beat around the bush? Let's go right to the heart of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Either it happened or it didn't. Okay? Could there be an event such that if it could be known to have happened, the existence of God would be necessarily concluded from knowledge of that event? I mean, if you knew that event took place, there wouldn't be any way to get around it. And I say that there is, and I think that that event is one that we know and talk about every Sunday, and it's the resurrection of Jesus. Why is that event so significant? For one, because it's the biggest of all of the works. Now Jesus sometimes raises somebody else from the dead. Sometimes modern miracle charlatans claim to have raised someone from the dead. Do you know anyone who claims to have raised themselves from the dead? That one is, by itself, just a little bit further out than most people are willing to claim, right? That's not one that anyone brings up very often. I died the other day and brought myself back. Or the power of God brought me back without the help or aid of any prophet or individual medium. And these are pretty big claims. Do we know that it's a miracle? You know, sometimes something happens in the Bible and you can't tell if it's a miracle or not. I'll give you an example. Acts chapter 5. Peter says, you lied to the Holy Spirit, and Ananias falls dead. Luke never calls it a miracle. I kind of think it was, but Luke never uses the word. He just says, and they fell down dead. Okay? People do die. I suppose he could have scared them really bad, and they had a heart attack, and maybe, you know. What is my point? I'm not suggesting that's actually true. My point is that if you want to, you can take some of the events in the Bible and you can kind of wiggle them around and say, well, maybe it happened like this. Maybe the Nile turns red every so often, and maybe that chases the frogs out, and maybe the frogs produce boils, and maybe, I don't know how you get the sky dark, but, you know, okay. Anyway, you know, you can go on some of those History Channel trips where you watch a show on the History Channel and they say, here's the miracles the Bible explains, and they try to make a natural case for them. Okay. I don't buy any of it, but again, you could try that. What about being raised from the dead? Is there a slick method for faking raising from the dead? Go ahead, you had your hand up. Yeah, Paul's pretty emphatic. Yeah. That's why, for me, I prefer this version over the other one. If Jesus didn't feed the 5,000, I'm deeply disturbed by that, but all of Christianity doesn't hang on it. If Jesus isn't raised from the dead, all of Christianity hangs on that. I think he did both, just to be clear. But my point is, if Jesus isn't raised from the dead, that's one that is worth fighting over. I mean, that's one you've got to go to bat for. And if we can't defend that miraculous event, then I don't know what we're doing here. That's got to be the thing we believed happened. Okay? So let me just roll ahead a little bit further. Is there a clever method for faking a resurrection? Or is it a known scientific fact? You know, sometimes science changes. We talked about that. And something we thought was impossible turns out to be possible. So in the history of human science, how about death? Has our opinion on death changed very much? Dr. Figueroa, you know I was going to pick on you. What's the latest advance in modern science on death? Anybody coming back from that? If you came back, you weren't dead. Yeah, which is exactly what Aristotle would have told you, right? That's one that we've not really changed our mind about. Everybody dies. Is there anybody in your medical records who doesn't die? No. Everybody at some point, if we wait around long enough, everybody dies, and dead people stay dead. If you came back, our good doctor says you weren't dead. Is there a fact of science more generously proven by human experience than that one? I mean, is there anything in the realm of science or medicine that we're more sure of than that? Everyone dies, the dead stay dead. That's got to be the one we know. I still don't know if eggs are good for me or bad for me, but everyone dies and the dead stay dead. Does it make sense? I mean, that's the one we're sure of, and that's the one that Jesus claims to have flipped upside down. He died and he didn't stay dead, and he never died again. That's his claim. So this is a big deal. Now, how do we go about proving it? There's a couple of different ways we can talk about it. One, I know you're going to say I'm cheating again. One is to use your Bible. So I thought we didn't believe the Bible if we're atheists. That's true. But you don't even have to say it's from God for this point. Let's make sure I'm being clear. I believe it's from God. But to make this point, let's just say Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John wrote a book. We have four documents, historical documents, claiming that the same thing happened. They claim it with considerable detail. They give us a list of people who saw it that you could go check. Paul is still making a list of the people who saw the resurrection to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 15. He names them off. This one, this one, this one, this one, this one, this one. These are the people who saw it. So even into the teaching of the apostles, they're making this claim. Here's the list. You can go check. Peter, if we believe Acts, even just as a historical document, forget inspiration, but even if it's just a historical document, Peter in Acts chapter 2, standing a few hundred feet from where Jesus should have been buried, says he's not in his tomb. That is the easiest lie to expose. All anybody had to do was walk down to the tomb and say, there he is. And Christianity never happens. Instead, what did happen? 3,000 people that day wanted to be baptized, which they understood as a reenactment of the resurrection of Jesus Christ that Peter had told them had happened just a little bit down the road. So you can use the Bible just as a historical document. I mean, if we just assume that they were people writing a book, it's still fairly impressive. Just that much evidence is fairly significant. We don't have that much evidence for Caesar crossing the Rubicon or pick your favorite historical event, Alexander the Great doing anything. We don't have that kind of evidence for that. We've got considerable evidence, people claiming that they saw the resurrection of Christ. Another interesting evidence is the fact Christianity happened at all. I have N.T. Wright's name on the board. He wrote a 900-page book called The Resurrection of the Son of God about a few years ago. And probably in recent years, it's the most thorough account of the evidence for the resurrection. He was trying to see, can you prove that this is something that happened? And it's really thorough. And one of the things he mentions as his best argument is that Christianity happens. Do Roman people believe in the resurrection of the dead? No. I'll help you out. Roman philosophy does not include a resurrection. When you're dead like Rover, you're dead all over. Okay? Same thing we've been saying in medicine for a long time. Did the Greeks believe in the resurrection of the dead? They laughed Paul out of the building when he said something about people being raised from the dead. That's in our Bible. The Greeks did not believe in the resurrection. So much so that even the Sadducees, who had been influenced by the Greeks, also didn't believe in the resurrection. And they had arguments with Jesus about that one. Okay? Did Jewish people believe in the resurrection from the dead? Kind of is the correct answer. The Old Testament mentions it, but not the way the New Testament does. It's always kind of a tangent. Over here on the side, yes, we believe in that, but it's kind of a someday, yeah, God will do something someday. It's not an important Jewish belief. If you were to ask a Jewish person, tell us all the things that you think are important about your religion, resurrection would never even come up. If you ask them, do you believe in the resurrection? Oh, well, yeah. Daniel mentions it once. Job says, maybe if you cut down a tree, the tree can grow back. So maybe God will call my name and I'll wait till he does. I mean, it's really vague. So they seem to believe in resurrection, but they're not exactly sure what that means. Even in the New Testament, when Jesus talks to Mary and Martha when Lazarus is dead, he says, do you believe I'm the resurrection and the life? And she goes, oh, I believe he'll be raised at the last day. Yeah, somewhere in some Isaiah-like world, somewhere out there, the dead come back. Okay, we believe that. Why then does Christianity happen? Christianity is a religious movement who's not a side belief. Its central cornerstone is the claim that Jesus is declared to be the Son of God with power, Romans chapter 1 says, by the power of the resurrection. And everything Christianity does and says is resurrection-oriented. Baptism is the one I just mentioned. What a silly thing that is to do, unless you believe in the resurrection. See, that's not a side thing. That's not saying resurrection's out there somewhere. That is a firm belief that the resurrection happened and that it's central to your faith. So the question is, if the Romans didn't believe in it and the Greeks didn't believe in it and the Jews didn't care about it, why does this religious movement develop in history that says the most important thing that everyone in the world needs to believe is that this man was in fact raised from the dead and you will be too? How does that happen? And it's hard to explain how Christianity happens and how it works. Okay, it would be weird enough if some nut came along and said, hey, let's believe in the resurrection. The what? But to convince 3,000 people the first day, and a few thousand more the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and in a few centuries, you've covered Europe? How does that even happen? And Wright's answer is, the only way that you can explain it from a historical point of view is, something that had never happened before must have happened to allow this religion to happen. The fact that Christianity exists at all is a considerable testimony to Christianity's basic claim, which is the claim accounted in all four Gospels and then in various epistles, that Jesus of Nazareth died, like Flavius Josephus said, and appeared to them on the third day. If Jesus is risen from the dead, all bets are off. Because the dead stay dead. We know that, unless they don't. I'm completely out of time. I appreciate your attention. We want to come back to that because the resurrection is that important. Think up some good questions on the resurrection, and then we'll do more Christian-based stuff next week. No, we won't. Next week's the fifth Sunday, isn't it? Someday in the distant future, we will get back to that discussion.